Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage's completely online process lets you get a custom mortgage solution wherever and whenever you want. Check out Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. This week, election home stretch, Obamacare, the military bonus clawback, Megyn Kelly and Newt Gingrich mix it up, the Bundys walk. With polls looking good for her, Hillary Clinton told supporters in Florida to take nothing for granted.
It's going to be a close election. Pay no attention to the polls. Don't get complacent, because we've got to turn people out.
In Ohio, Donald Trump said, joked maybe, forget the election.
Thinking to myself right now, we should just cancel the election and just give it to Trump, right? What are we even having it for? What are we having it for?
And the Bundy brothers and more anti-government protesters who took over a federal wildlife refuge last winter were acquitted on all charges.
Ammon Bundy is
not guilty!
This hour on Point, our weekly news roundtable with Zeke Miller, Erica Greeter, and On Point news analyst Jack Beatty. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. How does this wild election season end? What are you thinking on Trump, Clinton, Obamacare, the Bundys? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from Washington is Zeke Miller, political reporter for Time Magazine. Zeke, welcome back to On Point.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
And from San Antonio, Texas, a toss-up state now? Can that really be true? Erica Greeter joins us, senior editor at Texas Monthly. Erica, great to have you back.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
And from Hanover, New Hampshire, Jack Beatty joins us. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom, Zeke, and Erica.
All right, Zeke, first to you. We've got a lot to talk about in this hour, but as we sit here now, a week and a couple of days from Election Day, what do the polls suggest about what's coming, and do you trust them? Donald Trump says don't.
You know, clearly we've seen a bit of a tightening the last few days. Now, mostly that's a result of Republicans coming home. A message we've heard a lot from Republicans over the last few weeks. You know, we've seen the share of Republicans who are backing Trump, it was down in the 70s at one point, back up, you know, in the middle of the 80s. That seems to be largely a result of these polls tightening, but across every survey, the reliable survey, Hillary Clinton clearly has a lead nationally and in the swing states. You know, it was never realistic to expect a double-digit lead to hold all the way through Election Day, but she still has a pretty significant single-digit lead.
Erica Greeter, take us to your state, Texas, which is said to be, after so many years of being so solidly Republican, potentially in play this year, I guess at the presidential level and down ballot as well. Is it true? What's driving that? How does that stand?
It is totally true. Texas is suddenly a swing state.
That is a mind-blowing sentence to hear.
You know, it's funny. It's been kind of wonderful to watch and kind of interesting to watch this unfurl. I've, of course, been covering this election pretty closely, in Texas in particular, and I wrote a post in May when Trump became the presumptive nominee saying that this could happen. Because I think that he is an anomalously weak candidate for Republicans in Texas. As you say, the state is solidly red. It was like Mitt Romney won it by 16 points in 2014 in the midterms, you know, slightly different turnout rate. But the Republicans swept the offices by 20 points. So the idea that 2 years later the state could be in play for a Democrat sounds crazy, and everyone thought I was like out of my mind. But I wasn't. And
here we are. It's the end of October. And what's moving the needle, Erica? Who's moving? If people are moving from Republican to Democrat, or at least away from Trump and maybe toward Clinton, who is it? Is it a Hispanic vote that's stepping up? Is it disenchanted Republicans? Is this pulling Democrats who might have sat on their haunches, you know, out
well,
to the...
Well, you know, it's what's great is that... neither party is really doing it, right? So the people are doing it. The Democrats, despite my prediction in May, did not listen to it or take it seriously. I think they were demoralized after all these years of getting shellacked in elections. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they've been kind of in their characteristic torpor in Texas. In the polls, what we see is, you know, Clinton's baseline is kind of where Obama's was in 2012. She's not really getting higher in the polls, but Trump has just come down to about 45. So he's well below where Mitt Romney was, where John McCain was. And so it's a mix, I think, of what we're seeing in the polls is disaffected Republicans. This is a conservative state. So there's a lot of conservatives, a lot of Republicans who really care about the party, the cause, the principles, and who therefore are not just going to go for Donald Trump, who's a very atypical candidate for a Republican. And I think it'll come down to then turnout, which is, of course, hard to predict, but it'll be young voters and new voters, newly registered voters. Hispanic voters have historically voted more have been more divided in Texas than in the nation. I mean, you see these huge lopsided margins in national polls of Hispanic voters, but in Texas it's been about 55-45 maybe, 60-40. And we'll see if that changes this year, if that change is permanent. But it's hard to say. Early voting started. We're seeing record turnout in big counties. We can't really tell who's voting or why, but the signs to me suggest that the turnout is turnout against Trump.
Zeke, if Donald Trump were to pull it out, first of all, could he? And if he did, what would be the path to pulling it out at this point with, you know, you've got people saying 90%+ chance of Hillary Clinton winning, but of course that can change. If he were to pull it out, where would that come from?
Yeah, I mean, you know, a 90%+ chance, 80%+ chance. I mean, that means if you run the simulation 10 times, 1 out of 10, that's still pretty, you know, pretty decent likelihood. Certainly, you know, given, you know, the way this race has worked its way through, you know, the surprises we saw in the primary, you really can't take anything for granted. But for Trump, that would mean, you know, has to win North Carolina, has to win Florida, has to win Ohio, and then probably has to win Pennsylvania as well, and then another grab bag state of, you know, Nevada, some sort of surprise in Michigan or Wisconsin. And that also requires holding on to, you know, the red states that are now suddenly in play, you know, Texas a little bit, but certainly Arizona, Georgia, where he's seen a lot of weakness. It's unlikely that, you know, he would win Ohio and not also have a significantly narrow the gap in Pennsylvania or win Pennsylvania without winning Ohio. A lot of these states move together. This race is so nationalized right now. So we would expect to see it. And we haven't seen it in the polls. Donald Trump is talking about these sort of hidden voters or shy voters. And really, when you look at the data, it's just not there yet. Maybe that will come out in election day, but there really isn't. Doesn't seem to be a whole lot of evidence to his theories for why he's behind in all these public polls right now.
Hidden voters, shy voters who don't want to tell pollsters that they're voting for Donald Trump, we'll see soon enough. He stepped away from the campaign trail, interestingly, this week. But, hey, a ribbon-cutting ceremony at his new Washington Hotel right up from the White House on Pennsylvania Avenue in the old post office building there. Very grand building. He said the opening of that hotel is emblematic of how he would lead.
Project like this demonstrate what is possible when a team works together for a totally common purpose. It also shows how to work with our government and to get things done. My theme today is five words: under budget and ahead of schedule.
Under budget, ahead of schedule, but there's another big theme out there in Trump land still again this week: rigged system. Here he was in Florida talking about the election, the whole system, rigged, rigged, broken. Here he is.
If we win on November 8th, we are going to fix our rigged system. It's a rigged, broken, corrupt system. It's rigged. It's broken. It's corrupt. They want me to take that back. Let me tell you, folks, it's a rigged system.
Period, says Donald Trump. And here we are just a week and change from the election. Hillary Clinton went hard at that. Jack Beatty, I'll bring this to you. Here she was in New Hampshire saying these claims are a threat to the peaceful transfer of power.
All this talk about the election being rigged, trying to stir up people who are supporting him at his rallies, that is a direct threat to our democracy.
And Clinton in Florida saying he's going after democracy itself now.
Now, after spending his entire campaign attacking one group of Americans after another, immigrants, African Americans, Latinos, women, POWs, Muslims, people with disabilities, now his final target is democracy itself.
Jack, what's the state of the nation as we look down this last chute to the election, just a week plus now, and Donald Trump still saying rigged? She's saying this is a threat to democracy. Him, I guess, joking. Why even hold an election? Just name me president, and off we go. What do you see unfolding here, Jack?
Well, I think Hillary Clinton is right. He's shaking the pillars of our democracy. If he loses, he said this week, it'll be because of a cabal, a, quote, power structure made up of, well, the judiciary, the media, voting security experts, the polls, military leaders, international bankers. They're all in cahoots to do him in. He's not losing because, to quote Charles Krauthammer, of his, quote, mendacity, he's not losing because of his pathological narcissism, his profound ignorance, and, as Krauthammer says, his astonishing dearth of basic human empathy. No, he's losing because all these forces are arrayed against him, and he's convinced about 43%, according to one poll, of his supporters that if he loses, it'll be a sign of corruption. Two-thirds of them think that the results could be manipulated. He's poisoning the Democratic well.
Well, you say so, Jack, and I can see the very real threat of that. Same time this week, more WikiLeaks emails out, Clinton Foundation emails about raising money here and spending money there and taking money here and taking money there. I don't know if there's a legal smoking gun in there, but an awful lot of horse trading for very big dollars in there, Jack. And you can imagine people saying, gosh, that is not pretty.
It certainly isn't. It shows what Colin Powell said about Mrs. Clinton is certainly true of Bill in spades, greedy, and just surrounded by these fixers who, you know, get their little fees out of people that contribute money to his foundation. And then these, quote, obtaining in-kind services for the president and his family, personal travel, hospitality, vacation and the like. You know, Bill Clinton has never really had what you could call a great deal of class. And in his, although I'm sure this foundation has done great works, its method of raising money just is odoriferous in the extreme. And, of course, the WikiLeaks have also shown just how worried Mrs. Clinton's aides have been about, quote, her judgment, the very question that Donald Trump has raised, that they just think, you know, the quoting here from her people saying, she just doesn't, we don't know what she's going to do. We don't believe in her, we don't have confidence that she's going to make good judgment. Her instincts seem terrible. Not a good week for Mrs. Clinton on her dirty laundry, and it's piling up.
At the same time, Jack, we're getting inured to this idea that somebody is out there just dripping all this stuff, stolen stuff, onto our election process. It is weird. She says Russia.
Yes, and so do our intelligence agencies, and of course the Clinton people say when you raise any of this, hey, we're not talking about that. This is Russia.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're looking at a week in the news. The Bundys walk. Trump ups the rigging talk. More Clinton emails. Obamacare premiums surging. Newt and Megyn Kelly tangle. I want to look at that. And the Bundys walking. That's, wow, amazing. I want to look at that for sure. Zeke Miller is with us with Time Magazine. Erica Greeter's here from Texas Monthly. Our own Jack Beatty is with us. And you can join us. What do you see going on out there? Are you focused on the Clinton emails, on Trump and rigging? What about the surrogates out there this week? Michelle Obama, Elizabeth Warren, and nasty women, Newt Gingrich, and Sex Talk, and Megyn Kelly. Are you stunned that the Bundy gang will walk? They're acquitted. Are you groaning or celebrating? Are you thinking about the Dakota Access Pipeline? I mean, what would happen there if those protesters were armed to the teeth? Zeke, Erica, Jack, I want to think about surrogates for a minute. There were a lot of them out there talking this week. Here was Michelle Obama. She's come out very strong for Hillary Clinton. She was in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, yesterday, telling supporters there to ignore messages about a stolen election. Above all, get out and vote.
If Hillary doesn't win this election, that will be on us. It will be because we did not stand with her. It will be because we did not vote for her. And that is exactly what her opponent is hoping will happen.
Michelle Obama very strong in the home stretch for Hillary Clinton. Earlier in the week, it was Massachusetts U.S. Senator Elizabeth Warren calling out Donald Trump on his offensive language toward women. Here's how she responded to him calling Hillary a nasty woman during the last debate.
On November 8th, we nasty women are going to march our nasty feet to cast our nasty votes to get you out of our lives forever.
My goodness, that's a lot of nasty and out of our lives forever. And then there was this, Erica, Zeke, Jack, this was the Fox News interview between host Megyn Kelly and Trump surrogate Newt Gingrich went viral this week. Gingrich accusing Kelly as they went back and forth for a couple of fascinating minutes of him saying that she's fascinated by sex and criticized her for covering the accusations of sexual misconduct against Donald Trump.
I want to go back through the tapes of your show recently. You are fascinated with sex and you don't care about public policy.
Me?
Now that's
really
what I get out of watching you tonight.
You know what? Mr. Speaker, I'm not fascinated by sex, but I am fascinated by the protection of women and understanding what we're getting in the Oval Office. And I think the American voters would like
and
to know.
And therefore, we're going to send Bill Clinton back to the East Wing because, after all, you are worried about sexual predators.
Yeah, listen, it's not about me. It's about the women and men of America.
And on it went, and it was something. Erica, can we go to that one first? I'll back up to the Clinton surrogates. But what did you make of that back and forth between Megyn Kelly and Newt Gingrich this week? Donald Trump thought it was terrific and said so.
Oh, yeah, of course he did. You know, it's like we're in this weird Groundhog Day situation. I mean, Megyn Kelly came out in August of last year and sort of pointed this out very shrewdly in the first question of the first debate in the primary.
Trump's history of calling women cows and so on?
Yeah, mm. And, you know, it's like more than a year later, it's like, I don't know why anybody's surprised that Donald Trump is a misogynist. I don't know why anyone's surprised Newt Gingrich is. In a kind of sick way, I'm almost I can't say I'm grateful or happy about it, but I think that this subtext has been there the whole time. It's been there for years. Like, I see it every day. I experience it every day. And so now it's become so overt that everyone has to recognize it as such, right?
But, I mean, it's double weird now that in the interceding year, it's come out Roger Ailes and his sexual harassment alleged of women and more, and you know Gretchen Carlson, and even of Megyn Kelly herself at some point. And he's now, of course, in the Trump camp. So there's a very strange kind of energy in this Fox newsroom with Newt Gingrich these days.
Well, I think that, you know, a lot of what Trump's campaign has been doing lately, especially, does not seem to be rational if you assume that their goal is to win the election. But if you assume that their goal is perhaps not to win the election, or is at least to have a good fallback plan post-election, to have a devoted, loyal audience of supporters, of readers, of listeners, of viewers, then some of these things start to seem a little more consistent with the incentives.
Zeke, what about that Trump on the side? I mean, he says he's still going for the main event, and a lot of his supporters, of course, that's what they want. They want Trump in the White House. But if not that, what's the fallback?
You know, we've heard a lot, you know, from him about, you know, potentially Trump TV. He's personally denied that he's interested in that. But talking to the people around him, they certainly have had conversations. Jared Kushner, his son-in-law, has been spearheading a lot of those, that fallback plan. A lot of that depends on sort of how he wants to lose, if that's the direction he's going in. Does he want to be sort of conciliatory? Or does he want to sort of be defined and sort of push out the rigged rhetoric that we've seen from him over the last several weeks on the campaign trail? And if he does that, he can take, you know, maybe, you know, it's not 30% or 50% of the Republican Party, but it's 15, 10, 15, 20. That's a lot of people. That's, you know, certainly enough to build yourself a pretty successful cable television network or an online streaming service or just some other way to that. You know, it's for Donald Trump, it's almost less about making money as a cable television network than it is about maintaining that grasp of support over the people that he has come to realize really like him and his message, and being able to wield that power in successive Republican elections, you know, both up and down the ballot in 2018, 2017, and ultimately 2020.
Already out there doing some of that on Facebook Live. Lots of calls this week. Mike in Newport, Rhode Island. Mike, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to make a comment on this great Friday show that you usually have about one of the first things you said about when is this election going to be over. Ira Glass had a great This American Life a week or so ago stating that it's really not going to be over because Donald Trump is not going to stop campaigning. He's going to keep on going and going and going, and I believe that he is going to try to buy his own network to foster that ambition.
Is that a big deal? Is that a problem? I mean, lots of people have owned networks over time.
Lots of people haven't said that the entire system is rigged in the way that he has, and none of them that I can remember were presidential candidates.
Trump as ongoing threat to democracy, or Burr in the saddle, as he might say, of elite rigged status quo. Mike, thank you for that. Let me get one more right here. Auburn, Alabama. Scott, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I would like to, in the middle of a deep red country, I'd like to give you a perspective that I don't think you guys in the East Coast get very often.
Oh, we listen every day, Scott, and I'm listening right now, and we listen with ears wide open. Let's hear it.
Most of my friends don't think Donald Trump is a reasonable person. They recognize him for the idiot he is, but they also recognize so many things that the media seems to have their thumb on the scale about. We know that the the videos, the O'Keefe videos this week have been essentially buried as if they didn't exist. We know that until Morning Joe yesterday, that most of the main publications, The Atlantic, for example, has not touched all of the Clinton revelations in the WikiLeaks, which really do show a pay-for-play that's just utterly horrible.
Though I've seen those on page one week after week after week, Scott. You must have seen that, too. I mean, that's the media.
No, sir. No, sir. I actually, it's funny, you go to Google News and just see what their lead stories are.
Yeah.
And every single day. No, I...
Well, New York Times, I mean, you get your media where you do, but that's today, interesting about Google News. I hear you.
Today,
yep.
We also noticed, for example, that there was no prosecution of the Black Panthers who had sticks in front and clubs in front of the polling places by the Obama administration, but everybody's fearful to death that conservatives will be checking out polling places. Well, there's just an inconsistency in the media which gives rise. It is the Republican equivalent of when the folks on the left call voter ID the equivalent of Jim Crow and voter suppression. It's hyperbole. But one side gets treated as a hyperbole makes great sense, and the other side gets treated as if they're crazy. Mm-hmm. And trust me, I'm not uneducated, and I agree as I watch my friends making, I think, a bad choice.
Yep.
But the worst that is said about Hillary is frankly true, and the worst that's said about Trump is frankly true. But if you watch the media, the mainstream media, and yes, that is a great, I know that's a catchphrase.
That's broad. Okay.
But I just promise you, these issues I bring up, these are their nuggets of truth in the rigged election piece from Deep Red America as to what gets covered, what doesn't get covered, how it gets covered. And we're tired of being called racist for disagreeing on policy. We are tired of, and so those pressures and their associated contempt for Hillary and her cronyism and her corruption have given us this thing we've got today.
Scott, I appreciate your call very much. Thank you for bringing it. Nuggets of truth in the rigged. I mean, who can deny that, Jack? In any system, there's a status quo that people will rally around, and nuggets of truth. On the other hand, I mean, Scott's got a laundry list there, and I might challenge him on some of those O'Keefe videos. A long time ago, I really began to wonder about the veracity of Mr. O'Keefe, and he's got a very checkered history as he brings it. On the other hand, you know, he says, look, where's the big noise about some of this Clinton stuff? And I've seen it out there. I've seen it on page one. What about Scott's assessment of how all this gets presented, Jack?
Well, you know, it's probably useless to point out that the front page lead story in yesterday's New York Times was all about Clinton emails. I'm looking at
that's pretty prominent, at least if you're reading it.
I'm looking at the headline in the Financial Times: Clinton's quote terrible instincts worried AIDS. I just don't think this is getting undercovered. But I understand he feels that way, and that's the point. There's a kind of willed motivation out there. People see things that are politically cued for them to see. We do have sort of two ways of looking at reality in this country. Call them red and blue. Call them conspiracy or not. Call them a feeling of aggrievement versus a feeling of the status quo. But these are the passions. These are the roiling feelings that are going to be part of our political and our part of our political culture. And the question is what we do about it. You know, the candidates have been trying to, people have asked them, what are you going to do to heal the breach?
Yep.
Mrs. Clinton says, well, we're going to have infrastructure. And if only that were that easy. And I think with Trump, what we're seeing is possibly he's going to push the Trumpian epistemology of what's true, the aggrieved narrative of what's wrong with America. He's going to have a megaphone for that in some way, and it's going to continue after the election.
Erica, you're there in what has been solidly red country. Maybe not quite as much now, but the base certainly there has looked red. What about the complaint that the narrative just isn't squarely portrayed? When Scott says, you're called racist if you disagree on policy.
Well, I'd like to actually respond to both Scott and Mike. I think those are both good questions. First, to Scott's point, Scott, I appreciate you and I agree with most of what you just said. I think I can see that too. I'm part of the mainstream media at Texas Monthly, but I'm also based in Texas. I rarely go to D.C. or New York. And, you know, for years, I mean, I'm well aware that I think the mainstream media skews left, and you know, examples of what you're describing. One we're watching right now is the rise in Obamacare premiums. Right? I mean, I remember a couple of years ago when I was covering Ted Cruz, I was writing about Obamacare a lot, and you know, at that point, it was like Democrats were like, "It's a great law. It's making healthcare affordable. Like anyone who's against the law is racist. You know, like it's Obama's healthcare law." And it was just so I mean, it felt so disingenuous. Because what conservatives were saying is now proving true. It's just a really, really poorly designed law, right? So I agree with what you're saying. I mean, and one of my concerns in this election is that Donald Trump, you know, he is such a bad messenger for the Republican side. He is worse than any Trump supporter I've ever met. I've met a lot of Trump supporters. I mean, I have friends and family who support Trump. And I worry that because he himself is so invidious that his supporters will be left tarred by association with him. You know, I mean, I've never met a Trump supporter who would have attacked Ghazala Khan for grieving on stage over her dead son. Mm-hmm. But Trump did that. And so people, I worry that that will be the face of Republican voters going forward. People like you who are making a more thoughtful point and more reasonable point won't be heard or taken seriously. And I'm not sure how that's going to resolve itself. But then beyond that, to Mike's point, as far as the rigged election claims, one thing that I think is great about Texas being in play is that the election is definitely not rigged in Texas. It's not rigged literally or metaphorically.
How do you say that? What do you mean?
Well, this state has had Republican hegemonic control for 20 years, for an entire generation. Republicans run the elections. They do a good job. They take voter fraud very seriously. We have voter ID. I mean, they are not goofing around mm-hmm. or being sloppy or cavalier about how our elections are actually run. Yep. There's no rigging being done by the Republicans like Greg Abbott, the governor of the state, obviously. But then beyond that, the idea of like the media rigging it or kind of like the powers that be rigging it, no. I mean, I told you guys earlier, I predicted this and everyone thought I was crazy. So maybe I was trying to rig it by saying this could happen, right? But like nobody else listening to Democrats haven't even been trying to win the state. So for it to be this close, it's not because there's some kind of, you know, conspiracy or some kind of metaphorical rigging or literal rigging. It's just that people are individually, spontaneously deciding they can't support Trump, and they're going to the polls.
We're going to take on all this rigging talk on Monday and intimidation talk and hacking talk and all the rest and think about what the consequences might be on Election Day. Amy in Decatur, Georgia. Thank you for calling, Amy. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I was just calling because earlier you were asking or you were talking about the fact that there's been so many WikiLeaks against Hillary and whether or not that has affected people mm-hmm. Voting. I have a couple things to say. One is that I feel that, and I'm a woman voter, I'm a Democrat, and I feel that Hillary is being held to a level of scrutiny that Donald Trump just isn't being held to. She is having her information leaked like every single day. And if I just feel like if you looked at Trump stuff every single day, you'd probably be even more horrified. And, you know, she has a history in government. So there's like a big paper trail there that
yep.
can.
And she's put her taxes out there as he still has not. And we're about to vote on a billionaire.
I'm a little bit annoyed that WikiLeaks or whoever is responsible for this leak thinks that I'm dumb enough that I'm like, oh, look, she was worried about what the voter thought and, you know, or that her aides discussed if you think that's not going on the other side, that's crazy, you know, and the foundation, like the Trump Foundation, I'm sure if you were looking at the financial stuff going on there and that information was leaked, it'd be way worse.
Amy, I appreciate your call. Zeke, will you be our even-handed judge here? It's hard to compare because it's true that with this WikiLeaks, is it an onslaught now? We have a great imbalance of transparency at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I think the common thread through all three of those questions is that there is this weird imbalance in this election because you have somebody like Hillary Clinton in this race, and you spent a long time in the public eye, and Donald Trump who hasn't, and you know. Hillary Clinton is being held to a higher standard right now than Donald Trump. Yes, because she's put more out there, but that doesn't mean it's an unfair standard or a lower standard than any other candidate in the past. And that's the striking thing. She's being held to the same standard as previous presidents.
Let's know all that we can. Let's put those tax returns out there, Mr. Trump. It's still not too late. and we're voting on you for the presidency. Come on. Zeke Miller with Time Magazine, please stand by. Erica Greeter at Texas Monthly, great to have you here this week. Jack Beatty, I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings home financing into the 21st century with a completely online process that's fast, easy, and convenient. Using a phone or tablet, you can safely share bank statements and pay stubs without having to dig through piles of paperwork. It takes just a few minutes to get a custom mortgage solution on your terms, wherever and whenever you want. Check out Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSConsumerAccess.org. Number 3030.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. In other news this week, the migrant camp in Calais, France, the so-called jungle, was dismantled, with migrants to be dispersed around France. Here they chant, and Freya Mergler with the Women and Children's Center describes confusion at the scene.
Some women think that they are being taken to the UK, however, there's not a process in place, and there is not a process in place for vulnerable families either.
Bill Murray received the Mark Twain Prize for Humor at the Kennedy Center in Washington.
As much as I dreaded this, I really had to come back to this idea that there's love. There's love. That's what we came with, what we go with.
And the Chicago Cubs and Cleveland Indians are head-to-head in the World Series. Cubs player Kyle Schwarber helped the team secure their win in Game 2.
Schwarber with another base hit. Cubs up 4-0 here in the fifth inning, and Schwarber's knocked home two.
We're looking at a week in the news. The Bundys walk. Trump ups the rigging talk. More Clinton emails. Obamacare premiums surge. Newt and Megyn Kelly tangle. Zeke Miller is with us from Time Magazine. Erica Greeter with us from San Antonio, Texas today and Texas Monthly. Jack Beatty's here. You can join us. What do you think about the acquittal in the case of the Bundys and what all seven acquitted after taking over that federal wildlife refuge in Oregon? What are you thinking about Obamacare and its future this week? Are you with the Dakota Access Pipeline people? What would happen there if those protesters were armed to the teeth like those had been in Oregon? What are you thinking about the clawed back military bonuses, the bulldozed migrant camp in Calais, the Cubs and Indians in the World Series? We're not done with election talk if that's where your interest lies, but I really have to turn to this Bundy verdict. Yesterday, federal jury acquitted seven people involved in the occupation of the Malheur National Wildlife Refuge from last February. Here's Nevada Representative Michelle Fiore speaking for the verdict. In February, she helped negotiate the end of the Oregon occupation.
This should send a real loud and clear message to all electeds to stand with Americans, with your constituents, with the citizens of America, not tyrannical, corrupt, unlawful government employees such as the BLM.
Okay, so the radical ones here are the government employees who were in the wildlife refuge. The verdict judged that Ammon and Ryan Bundy and five others were not guilty. Here's Joan Anzelmo, a retired federal land manager from Wyoming, speaking out against the verdict.
This was a national wildlife refuge that was taken over essentially in an act of domestic terrorism with arms and terrorizing the town, threatening the citizens, threatening the employees. With the way the country is right now, this is going to embolden militia types who, if they don't like something, they'll take up their arms and, you know, laws be damned.
There were federal conspiracy and weapons charges here stemming from that takeover of the federally owned wildlife sanctuary in Oregon last winter. I want to bring it to all of you, Erica, Zeke, Jack, but to our callers first, Kevin in Crandon, Wisconsin. Kevin, you're on the air.
Hello, Tom. Yeah, greetings from the Northwoods, Wisconsin.
Hey.
My jaw literally hit the floor when I heard that they'd been acquitted. Wow, that's crazy. I thought when all that was going on, beginning of the year, that I thought that the governor of Oregon should have immediately activated the National Guard and cleared them guys out of there post-haste. No doubt about it. I live up where I'm at here. I'm in the National Forest, and we have a lot of these crazy gun people up here, and I think this is just going to encourage this kind of thing going on. And I don't think there's I think it's just insane.
We got more calls on this, Kevin, but I appreciate your country, your call from North Country there, Zeke Miller. Conspiracy and weapons charges, and the jury comes back and says they can walk. I mean, we all watched it. We all saw the weapons, the takeover. What happened here?
Yeah, I mean, it seems to be a case of a case of jury nullification, where you know everyone sort of, you know, were they carrying their weapons on federal lands in threatening ways? Yeah, everyone sort of saw this all play out on television, but the jury largely because the defense was able to make it essentially prosecute the government, which was prosecuting the defendants, they were able to get a jury to return a not guilty verdict. I mean, that's jury nullification. We've seen these defenses made in all sorts of cases.
With a freedom of speech argument here, that they have to have the freedom to protest what's going on. Erica, what do you make of this?
On the one hand, I don't want to overinterpret it. I think I'm not an expert in Oregon politics, but my impression covering or looking at events in Oregon has been that they have some interesting, weird strains. Like, they have like very heated fights about fluoride and water. And it's like this kind of
– I mean, this isn't politics. These guys weren't even from Oregon. Most of them or any of them.
But the jurors, you know. I mean,
well,
maybe they're receptive to that kind of argument. It's sort of, like the libertarian strain in Oregon that is different. I mean, it's a different inflection than we have in Texas. But I think to the gentleman from Wisconsin's point – I'm sorry, I forgot his name. You know, it's really troubling to see grievances legitimated, because when people have a grievance legitimated by authorities, by the courts, by the process, they harbor that grievance. And
people have grievances, and some of them are legitimate. I mean, the lawyer for one of these defendants said the government was not there to find the truth. He said this case is about people wanting to be heard, and they're just frustrated with our government.
Well, so that's what's so tricky about it. And, you know, I'm based in Texas, and I cover Texas politics, and so I cover a lot of Republican intra-party fights because it's Texas. And I've seen this happen before. There are legitimate grievances. That's why it's so pernicious when there are illegitimate grievances that are treated as if they're legitimate, because it is rightfully the case that the American people defend their rights, insist on their rights, advocate for their rights, you know. And I think we all have a sort of inbuilt norm that is how it should be, that if somebody's rights have been violated – that should be taken seriously. But then you have people – I mean, we had this thing last year in Texas about constitutional carry, open carry.
Yep.
So there was like a very, very small cadre of people who took the position that any kind of licensing or background checks or anything is unconstitutional and wrong. And although that's a very, very marginal reading of the Second Amendment, I mean, there's no serious constitutional scholar who would agree with that. You know, it was sort of taken seriously by statewide leaders. And so then those people are going to go forward assuming that our current regime in Texas is in fact unconstitutional, that the Second Amendment is the license and they don't need to – they shouldn't have to, you know, comply with state regulations about fees and background checks and training courses and whatnot. It's really, really troubling. And
yeah. Just kind of an incredible scene. 11 people had already pled guilty. I mean, we remember that one of the participants, Lavoy Finicum, was killed by authorities during the standoff. It was tense. The whole country was watching. And they took over there at Malheur for 6 weeks. They demanded the federal government surrender almost 200,000-acre property to local control. And now they walk. And there's another case, of course, that may be affected by this, of Cliven Bundy, the dad of these guys, for that earlier armed standoff. We all recall horseback mounted and all the rest. Samantha in Beaufort, South Carolina. What do you think, Samantha?
Yes. Hi, Tom. I have two comments. One regarding Zeke Miller's comment on the election, but regarding the not guilty verdict in Oregon, I do think it is just amazing that we have armed white men being set free, you know, declared not guilty. And I think, you know, we all know if these men had been black, Hispanic, or God forbid, Muslim men armed on national property, we know how this would have ended. And they would have been, that thing would have been put down within 24 hours. And I just think it's, you know, even more speaking to the situation in our country where people feel, you know, treated unequally.
Yeah, it's easy to imagine. Samantha, would you let me just pick that one up right there, because we have so many callers right on this Bundy front. And I appreciate your call from South Carolina. One more from right on down the pike there, Atlanta, Georgia. David, you're on. Thank you, Samantha. David, you're on.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah,
I just wanted to say, like, my background is in anthropology. I focused in archaeology. I've worked for the BLM before out in Nevada. And as somebody who was, you know, essentially an employee of the BLM, I was a scientist. I was doing a range survey, just collecting plant samples, not a tyrannical agent of, some kind of, violence.
Collecting plant samples sounds okay.
Yeah, right. But on the other hand, we have actual armed gunmen from out of state coming in and taking over federal property, getting off free. And the Dakota Access Pipeline, we have actual indigenous people protesting the development on sacred land who are just today and yesterday being met with militaristic police forces and armed vehicles and riot gear. These are unarmed people being met with an actual tyrannical, oppressive, violent government agents. And I'm not saying that, we're in a tyrannical, dictatorship, but certainly this is a militaristic response to peaceful protest versus an almost peaceful response to a militaristic protest. Mm-hmm. And there's a clear disparity. You have callers point that out earlier, saying that Republicans...
It's a crazy juxtaposition. So pick your tyranny here, Jack.
Well, I'm looking at the USA Today story that says a woman pulled out a .38 caliber pistol. This is one of the protesters, and fired three times at officers.
This is in the Dakota Access Pipeline scene?
This is in
but it's been peaceful overwhelmingly. When did that happen?
Yes, indeed. This just happened apparently yesterday, and so it shows that, it's been a peaceful protest until now, but shooting off a pistol it seems to me the sheriffs did well not to fire back. But, on this question of this acquittal, this does send this does embolden these groups. There are about 1,000 of them, similar groups, according to the Southern Poverty Law Center. One of them, the Oath Keepers, is threatening the elections. It's a national group, I'm reading now, of former military and law enforcement officers. And it's told its members to, quote, blend in with voters and do, quote, incognito intelligence gathering and crime spotting at polling places. And they put out a call to action to go out and, quote, help stop voter fraud. Now, whether they'll be, they're already going to do this, but this verdict, I think, is probably going to encourage them even more.
We'll talk more about that on Monday. I don't know if it's fair. I mean, it is unnerving that there was a pistol somewhere there in the Dakota Access Pipeline, but there have been so many months and such an overwhelming commitment to making it peaceful. Lots of arrests yesterday. Cannonball Ranch, North Dakota, police in riot gear corralled, put 140 peaceful, overwhelmingly Dakota Access Pipeline protesters under arrest. Here's the moment they did clash, captured by an activist on Twitter.
We're moving peacefully.
But it got pretty intense there. Big line of police. James in Amherst, Massachusetts. James, you're on. Thanks for calling.
Oh, hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I think I completely agree with your other previous callers that the hypocrisy in this system is completely... I mean, I don't really know how to even begin where...
What hypocrisy, James? Which one? What one?
Oh, that, there's a peaceful protest for the Dakota Pipeline that goes on, and now they've been forced to, the fight there has escalated because of militaristic intervention. The idea that, these people at first were just peaceful protesters. The news about a pistol being fired, that's new to me, but... I mean, that just seems like a logical step in escalation where, these people are being forced out of what they believe is, that they're under treaty. That's their native land. That's a place that, they deserve to have and have a voice about what goes on there. And yet the Bundy faction can take over with armed weapons and take over a national park. Like, and be acquitted of it is just something that's baffling.
Watch the synergy between those two. Of course, the Dakota scene is not over yet. We'll look at that next week as well. I appreciate your call, James. We've got a little more to look at, and it's hard to take our eyes off of that verdict. And yes, of course, there are people who want the federal government to not be so present in those vast holdings of lands in the West, but how do we get to that? If we get to that, whose interests get represented here? All kinds of interest this week. The military, the clawback of bonuses in California for National Guardsmen there who were reenlisting during the height of Iraq War in Afghanistan, asked to pay back sometimes tens of thousands of dollars. That got reversed by Defense Secretary Ash Carter, or at least he said, hey, let's be very careful with that. Paul in Des Moines, I was calling on that front. Paul, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
As a veteran, I took a bonus when I reenlisted in Iraq in 2005, and it was one of those situations where it seemed like an incredible opportunity to save some money for a future and stuff. And
yeah,
no veteran expects that to just be yanked out from under them.
Do you think those guys were responsible to understand the regulations, the law, whether they were getting exactly the right bonus, or is Ash Carter right that the Department
of
Defense
should understand that? Oh, I'm sorry, Tom.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Understand that these guys, when they're recruiters and stuff, their time is coming up. When I was coming short in Iraq, my sergeant major came up to me and said, "Hey, here's the deal. If you do this, 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 and this, we can give you a great signing bonus." And they throw all these things at you, and you trust these people to do the right thing.
Sure.
Trusting them to make the right decision, and to even have the possibility that could just get yanked out from underneath you because someone else did something wrong, it's horrifying.
It is pretty wild. It goes to whether or not we're willing to pay, Erica, for our military interventions.
I think Ash Carter is absolutely right, as is the caller. My family's military parents both served in the Air Force. These promises are they plan their lives. They plan my life has been shaped by the commitments they entered into, and so if it is absolutely not the fault of those who served to have figured out if the recruiter was wrong or was misleading them. I mean, that's ridiculous. Just imagine if you are a veteran who's come back from having served, and you're told years later that you now owe a big sum of money to. Because of a mistake that you didn't make. I mean, it's horrifying, the caller said.
I mean, Zeke, it's not like re-upping to play professional baseball. You're putting your life on the line.
Exactly, and they put their faith in somebody in the system. But there should have been more audit trails in place. At the time, not 10 years later, there shouldn't have been. At a certain point, I think if you were to poll most Americans, they're willing to part with that. Couple cents out of their tax bill.
Jack, under the gun of pressure of war, a lot of promises get made, not all get kept.
No, and the treatment of veterans, while it has improved, is really one of, the dark marks against this administration earlier in its tenure.
Well, here we are, coming up on 1 week to Election Day very soon. It's going to be wild. Zeke Miller at Time, Erica Greeter at Texas Monthly, Jack Beatty, as always, our thanks to all three of you for being with us. Thanks so much for joining us today. And listeners, thanks for your calls. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.